Chapter 22, The Recount. In August 2012, I went to Washington State to do a fundraiser for my colleague, Senator Maria Cantwell. After the event, the two of us sat together on some rich person's porch and talked about senator stuff. Maria was reflecting back on her first race for the Senate in 2000, which she had won after a painful 2-week recount. Let me repeat that, a painful 2-week recount. As she described her 2-week ordeal, I could see the anguish clearly written on Maria's face. Then she turned to me and asked, "How long was your recount?"
8 months.
"Oh my God, how did you do that?" "Well," I said, putting things in perspective, "it wasn't the Bataan Death March." Technically, it wasn't an 8-month recount. The recount itself actually ended on January 5th, in time for me to be seated with the rest of my class on January 6th. So it was a 2-month recount, worse than Maria's, but still. On January 6th, however, Norm Coleman officially took the anti-healing position, filing what is known as an election contest. In other words, he went to court to try to overturn my victory. That thing, the election contest, that took a while. The contest wouldn't be decided until April 13th, and then Norm, doubling down on the anti-healing thing, appealed that ruling to the Minnesota Supreme Court, which ate up another 2.5 months. But, you know, no hard feelings. Minnesota is widely and rightly lauded for its civic spirit, which is reflected not just in the high-minded tone of its political discourse, until Norm and I ruin that forever, and its high level of voter turnout. In 2008, as in the previous 6 federal elections, Minnesota led the nation, but also in its election laws. Our election officials are transparent and accountable. Our procedures are careful and methodical. We take our time to get it right. For example, even before a recount, there's a process called a canvass. You know the vote totals that you see next to the candidates' names on election night? Yeah, those are always wrong. Why? Well, because human beings are fallible, and the people who count votes are human beings. In Minnesota, the election night count is tabulated by the Secretary of State's office, based on results they get from precincts across the state, either by computer or by phone. And in that process, little mistakes happen. Arithmetic errors, transposed numbers, sevens that look like ones. An election official will say 916, and the person on the other end of the phone will hear 960. Stuff like that. So the election night count is always off, sometimes by a little, sometimes by a lot. And that's why election officials always do a canvass, a process by which they go back through the precinct by precinct data, check their math, and reconcile all the numbers to make sure they fixed any errors. This happens after every election. And it can change the margin by tens of votes, hundreds of votes, or thousands of votes. And the reason you almost never hear about it is that even a shift of thousands of votes almost never matters. But this time, with Norm up by just 725 votes heading into the canvass, it did matter. The canvass reduced his margin to 215 votes. How? Well, here's an example. In rural Partridge Township, the tape from the voting machines showed that Norm got 143 votes to my 129. Those results were written on a form and delivered by hand to the county seat, Pine City, where they were to be typed into a computer and submitted to the Secretary of State's office. But the county worker typing in those results accidentally entered just 29 votes for me. He or she missed the one key on the keyboard. It was the kind of mistake anyone could have made, especially at the end of a long election day. And during the canvass, when someone checked that 143-29 total against the original forms, the mistake was discovered and corrected, which meant 100 votes got added to my total. The entire canvass actually produced a relatively small shift in votes compared to the previous statewide elections. For example, in 2006, Amy Klobuchar's margin increased by 2,854 votes during the canvass, No one cared, though, because she had won by more than 400,000 votes. But because it resulted in Norm's already very small margin becoming even very smaller, his campaign freaked out. Panicking at the realization that Norm's emphatic declaration of victory might have been premature, they immediately cried foul, describing the entire routine correction of errors like the one in Partridge Township as statistically dubious and improbable shifts that are overwhelmingly accruing to the benefit of Al Franken. A tone had been set. The 725-vote lead Norm held the morning after the election would henceforth be treated as the only credible result. Any change to that margin, at least any change that wasn't in his favor, would be treated as evidence that I was trying to steal the election. Then we were on to the hand recount, which is just that. Election officials recount each individual ballot by hand. That's possible in Minnesota because of our voting technology. Optical scan machines read paper ballots that voters mark by filling in a circle like on an SAT test. So much of the process involves looking at a ballot that is clearly marked for a candidate and saying, yep, that ballot is clearly marked for that candidate. But occasionally, it can be unclear whether a given ballot should or shouldn't be counted, or which candidate it should be counted for. For example, a voter might have screwed up the filling in the circle instruction, or a voter who had changed her mind might have filled out the circle for one candidate, crossed it out, and filled out a circle for another candidate, or a voter who had brought a hot dog into the voting booth might have gotten mustard on his ballot. That happened thousands of times. In any event, the election judge makes a call as best he or she can. But each campaign gets to have representatives present who can challenge that call if they disagree. If a ballot is challenged, it gets set aside to be adjudicated by the state canvassing board, which, for my recount, consisted of two Republican appointees, two Democratic appointees, and an independent appointee. By the end of the recount, the canvassing board was handed a pile of 1,325 disputed ballots out of 2.9 million cast, counted, and recounted. They examined each one by hand in public during lengthy and tedious sessions live-streamed on the Internet. In the end, the board split 3-2 on just 14 ballots. They split 4-1 45 times, but they were unanimous on all the rest. And when they were done, I was up by 49 votes. One more wrinkle. Some voters had tried to cast absentee ballots, only to have those ballots rejected. And our team discovered that some of those absentee ballots shouldn't have been rejected. So we went to court to make the case that wrongly rejected absentee votes should be counted. We didn't know who the votes were for, but we figured we might as well stick with the position we adopted from the outset. Count every legal vote. Coleman stuck with his I won, screw you position. In the end, the court ruled that 933 wrongly rejected absentee ballots should in fact be counted. But by the time they were to be opened, Norm wasn't in the lead anymore. I was. Which made it even more nerve-wracking to watch those ballots be opened for the first time, live on the Internet. Franken. Franken. Coleman. Barkley. Franken. Coleman. Fortunately, they wound up breaking in my favor, and my lead grew from 49 votes to 225, which is the margin the canvassing board certified on January 5th, declaring me the winner. Yay. Where the hell was I during all of this? In my house, mostly calling people for money to pay for our bafflingly large and expensive team of lawyers, led by Democratic super attorney Mark Elias. If you're ever in Washington, check out the Franken wing of the Perkins Coie Law Office. It's gorgeous. True to form, Stephanie Shriok had a plan in place for an eventual recount. And my role in that plan was to raise the money to pay for it, and nothing else. You see, I learned something very important during the recount, not to trust my instincts. For example, when I heard Coleman suggest that I step back and let the healing begin, my instinct was to respond with something biting and sarcastic. But wisely, my team told me to shut up, which I did. And wouldn't you know it, as the weeks and then months passed, Minnesotans seemed to appreciate it. One day I was grocery shopping, and a woman came up to me and said, "I like the way you're handling the recount." I held up the avocado I was inspecting and said, "You see this avocado? It's handling the recount the exact same way I am." In fairness to me, the avocado didn't have to spend 6 to 8 hours a day calling wealthy avocados to raise lots and lots of money to pay for its many, many lawyers. When the state canvassing board declared me the winner, I finally spoke to the press for the first time since the recount had begun. I tried to strike a conciliatory note. "I know this is not an easy day for Norm Coleman and his family," I said. "And I know that because Franny and I and the kids have had plenty of time over the past 2 months to contemplate the possibility that this election would turn out differently." Pretty gracious, don't you think? I wrapped up my remarks and immediately flew to Washington so I could be sworn in with the rest of the new senators the next day, January 6th. Except, of course, that didn't happen. Thanks to the delay caused by Norm's unsuccessful election contest and his subsequent unsuccessful appeal of his unsuccessful election contest, it would be almost exactly 6 more months before I could get to work in the Senate. Which meant, for 6 months, Minnesota would have only one senator. Norm's term had expired, and with no one there to replace him, Amy Klobuchar's office had to handle double the constituent service duty, which doesn't sound like a big deal unless you're a Minnesotan trying to get help with a late Social Security check. It also meant that President Obama had one less Democratic senator there to help him rescue the economy. As you'll hear in a little while, Republicans had no interest in helping at all, which oddly didn't seem to trouble the new president. Soon after Norm filed his election contest, Shriock got a call from a top Obama advisor who proudly informed her that a check for $20,000 from the Democratic National Committee to help pay for our legal bills was on its way. "Don't you dare do that," Shriock barked. The Coleman campaign had just received $1 million from the Republican National Committee. A check for $20,000 from the DNC would be worse than getting nothing. She called her friend Jim Messina, who had become the president's deputy chief of staff, to make that point. Sheepishly, he asked, "So you were expecting something with another zero?" "Another 2 zeros," Shriock responded. Ultimately, we got the one extra zero, $200,000, and when I visited Washington shortly after, I got a promise from that top Obama advisor that the new president, whose approval rating was well over 60%, would do a fundraiser for me. He never did, but again, overall, great president. In almost every other state, the governor and secretary of state would have signed an election certificate as soon as I won the recount, and I would have been seated provisionally in the U.S. Senate, along with the rest of my Senate class, while the legal contest was being resolved. Not in Minnesota. According to Minnesota state law, Governor Tim Pawlenty and Secretary of State Mark Ritchie could not sign the certificate until all state legal remedies had been exhausted. But after I won the recount, I learned from my lawyer, Mark Elias, that Harry Reid wanted to find a way for the Democratic-controlled U.S. Senate to seat me anyway. "No way," I told him. It just felt wrong. Minnesotans are big into fairness. We love process. And besides, I told Elias, I might want to get reelected. "You'd have 6 years to figure that out," he countered. But I stood firm. I was totally committed to letting this happen, however it was going to happen. After the recount, I knew I had, in fact, received the most votes, and that it was just a matter of time until I got to Washington the right way. And in that sense, the 6-month delay was actually a lot harder on Norm than it was on me. He had lost, and now his legal team was grasping at straws to find some way to reverse his defeat. For me personally, those 6 months were the most relaxed and enjoyable period of my life, from the moment I announced my campaign to, well, right now. I still had to raise money like crazy, but Franny and I actually got to go out to dinner once in a while. Instead of just eating peanut butter out of the jar in our darkened kitchen after getting home from a campaign event at 2 a.m, like we'd been doing for 2 years. We even took a vacation, although actually it was terrible. Shriok insisted that we get out of town for a while, escaping the Minnesota winter for Key West, home of Margaritaville and Key Lime Pie. But we spent the entire miserable week trying to get the internet to work and then sitting in front of Franny's laptop, watching the live stream of the election contest. It could have been worse. Poor Norm didn't get to eat any key lime pie. He came to court every day and sat somberly at his lawyer's table, looking somewhat like a husband on trial for murdering his wife. Just to be clear, Norm was not on trial for murdering his wife, or anyone for that matter. It was a civil proceeding. Coleman's election contest made a variety of charges of impropriety and unfair treatment, each of which fell apart under the scrutiny of the three-judge panel appointed to hear the contest, one Democratic appointee, one Republican appointee, and again, one independent appointed by Jesse Ventura. But all they succeeded in doing was getting another 351 previously rejected absentee ballots counted, which increased my margin to 312 votes. The judges threw out Norm's contest in a unanimous tripartisan decision. I emerged from my house to give yet another magnanimous victory speech, and that was that. Except, of course, that still wasn't that. Coleman appealed the case to the Minnesota Supreme Court, which would eat up another 2 months. By now, he had gone from throwing Hail Marys to simply delaying the inevitable, which was actually the point. In April, Republican Senator Arlen Specter announced that he was switching parties, giving Democrats 59 votes in the Senate. Once I was seated, we would have a filibuster-proof 60-vote majority. Never mind that nobody thought an appeal would have any chance of succeeding. Republicans may have been disappointed that they didn't win the seat, but they could at least draw this out as long as possible. It wasn't until June 30th that the Minnesota Supreme Court denied Coleman's appeal. Norm called me that day to concede, which he did with notable grace. "It's the best job you'll ever have," he told me. "Norm," I said, "it couldn't have been any closer." Later I would tell Shriok, "I guess I really don't hate him after all." "Ha!" she cried. "I knew it!" Once again I emerged from my house to magnanimously declare victory. The election had been in the fall. I had won the recount in the winter. The contest had been dismissed in the spring, and now, on a glorious summer day, it was finally over. The moral of the story? Well, for one thing, if you're going to declare a victory that you know full well might not hold up under the scrutiny it's about to receive, maybe try to underplay it a little. Also, if you're a law student with a lot of debt piling up, might I suggest a career in election law? But really, the moral of the story is that, as corny as it sounds, your vote can make a huge difference, and your activism can make an even huger one. When you win a race by 312 votes out of 2.9 million cast, it's hard not to think about all the individuals who each literally could have been the one who got you elected. I know a lot of Minnesotans who talked to more than 312 voters, or dropped more than 312 pieces of literature, or gave us $20 so we could run a rural radio ad that reached more than 312 people. So when I go to DFL events in Minnesota now, I have a lot of people to thank, and I have to thank them effusively because each and every volunteer could have been the one who made the difference between winning and losing.